This is the 2020 North Battleford March Study Weekend with Brother Jim Stiles. The theme for the weekend is Joe, How God Trains His Children. This is class number 4. The title of this class is God is Working to Save His Whole Family.
Well, good morning, everyone. Thanks for that lovely card that some of you signed and passed on to me yesterday. Appreciate that very much. Nice to have some of your thoughts to take home with me to Simi Valley. I'm sure all the brothers and sisters down there send their greetings up here. I know you're not so far ahead on coronavirus as we are, but I got a message while I was here yesterday letting us know that they've canceled meeting down there. No ecclesial meetings anymore for a while. And instead, my son has to go and give an exhortation to an empty room and see me. And there will be a presiding brother and a piano player. And everybody else stays home and they watch the stream. And that's the solution that the current medical field is feeling like. That will slow down the passing of the virus. And they admit it's not going to stop it. Everybody will eventually get exposed, but at least it will slow it down. And currently that is the goal because our medical system cannot handle everyone getting sick and at once. So that is the current strategy, and probably it will happen up here as well at some point. But maybe it's so cold up here, it just won't happen. It's amazing how that could probably slows down the whole system. This slows the virus down. That's great. So when it warms up over the summer, we'll send it up this way. You'll notice in the hymn that we just sang, it mentioned to fear with all our hearts your law. And unfortunately, the English word fear, when you look it up, the list of meanings of fear goes on and on and on, because we have taken a word and applied it over so many different situations. And in the Hebrew, it's not like they had different words for things. Like if you're afraid, there's a word that means afraid. And if you have reverential fear for God, there's a word for that. But in English, we don't. And that's part of what has been our problem, where we have blended our English Bibles, when we read about fearing God, to fear the Lord, what does that mean? And when you fear with all your hearts God's law, it's not that you're afraid of God. It's that you respect it and you realize this is what's going to change our lives. This is what's going to bring us into a relationship with God. And we realize it's the only thing. And to me, the solution has always been just think of Jesus. Now, we'll do that in the exhortation this morning, but all you got to do is think of the relationship he had with his father. Do you really think Jesus was afraid of his dad? That's not the relationship God wanted with him. He wanted a loving relationship where Jesus served him out of love and declared God right by love, not by fear, because that's what would drive him to finally go through the cross. And so it's a reverential fear. That's what we want to have of our God. That's what he wants from us. So we didn't get very far yesterday with Elihu, but at least you got introduced to the idea that Elihu brings new information to the table, and this is why Job doesn't respond. Even though Elihu invites his response, Job listens. And what God's doing with Elihu is that you're at a point where however long the situation has gone on over months, Elihu steps in now, the young man steps up, he introduces new information, he forces Job to think outside his box, and as Elihu is talking, out in the distance, in the flatlands like here at North Battleford, you can see a storm brewing in the east. And this storm is coming down, actually it's coming down from the north, and God's going to come in through this storm. And there's a whirlwind that's blowing, and it's like a tornado is going, one of those big, wide tornadoes. And it's coming in, and the clouds are forming, and the skies are getting dark. And there's lightnings, and there's thunders, as Elihu is talking. And Job realizes God's coming to talk to him. And what we want to look at today is this whole situation when God finally does come to talk. For those of you that are wondering about, if you want to do your own study of Job, what have we got out there in our community today? I'll tell you what I have found very useful in our community. We have some nice books on Job today. Back years ago, that was not the case. Brother Sponberg's is one of the first to ever come out. He wrote a book on Job years ago, which is very good, very helpful, and has a lot of these issues laid out correctly, I think. And I found it very useful. So did my dad years ago when he studied it. So it's now been published as what it looks like as that blue book there. I don't know if it's back there at all, but it's still available today, the Book of Job. Brother David Baird, he also put out a book in more recent years from the CMPA, and that's also, I found that very useful. In fact, it's very similar to Brother Spondron's books. They actually go through in detail. They'll take you through the whole story of the debates and the whole thing, and they'll lay it out and give you alternative versions to use so that you can understand what was really happening, because that's a big key to this. We also have a study guide that the CMPA put out on Job, and I would recommend for the young people, especially if it's your first shot at looking at Job, that's a good thing to look at. It's brief, but it helps you understand the structure of the book and what the overall strategy is. And really, in terms of like their overall look at Job, all three of those totally agree on what's happening in the story. They agree on everybody, on Job, on Elihu, on the whole situation of what's happening and what God does when he answers. There's also some good articles that have been put out in the past in the Christadelphian magazine. If you've got Libronix and you can access those things, we've got Elihu's Place in the Book of Job by Brother John Carter and The Perfecting of Job by Brother Fred Pierce. And again, they all take the same basic perspective of what God is doing, of why did Job go through this, what did Elihu have to play, and then finally God's answer. There's also classes by my dad that you can listen to. John Launchberry's got some interesting classes on Job, as does John Popel and Neville Clark. Neville Clark is the only one. I just listened to him a couple of weeks ago. He's the first person who actually I realized this idea that I liked about going through and watching how Job changes his views as you go through the story. Neville Clark does that very well as well. So those are all things that you can listen to, and I'll tell you right now that all of those things right there came up with the same basic framework of Job. They all agree, slight differences in some of the specific cases, but they pretty much all agree on what's happening in this story. So in chapter 37, if we had time to look yesterday at what was going on with Elihu, what's happening is that Elihu, when he comes to Job in chapter 37, at the end of his speeches there, he says, "At this my heart pounds and leaps from its place. Listen." And that's not singular. That's actually plural in the Hebrew. So he's not just talking specifically to Job now. Elihu's looking across the group that are there and saying to everybody, "Listen. Listen to the roar of his voice and to the rumbling that comes from his mouth." Because something was happening right there at the time where God was now working in the weather conditions of the time to warn them that he was on the way. He unleashes his lightning beneath the whole heaven and sends it on the earth. Verse 5, God's voice thunders in marvelous ways. He does great things beyond our understanding. And then Elihu talks about the natural things with the snow and they fall and all the different things that happen, the rain showers. But in verse 7, so that all men may know, that all men he has made may know his work, he stops every man from his labor. See, this is what God will do for in our busy lives. He brings situations into our lives, sometimes through the natural world and disasters and so on, but he does it so that he can stop us from going down this pathway where we're just caught up in this world. So he stops us. Even the animals take cover and they remain in their dens. Now, you know, you look at this whole story overall as a conceptual thing. Why did God wait so long to talk to Job? He could have just come on the first day. He could have explained the whole scenario and said, "Well, look, there was this brother in the ecclesia. He thought you only served me because of what I gave you. And so I had to like show him he was wrong." God could have done that, but he doesn't. He patiently allows us this time. He puts us through experience that we just find devastating. It's like we're being crushed because he knows that if he told us this academically, we would listen. Job would have said, "Okay, now I understand why this happened." But it wouldn't sink in to Job or to the others around. It wouldn't be near as powerful as if he actually experienced it. God wants to drive these issues into our minds so that we don't just remember them this weekend. We go home and we remember them next week, and we remember them a year from now. He's trying to impress us with the events he brings into our life. He's trying to change us. Because we all know that, you know, when you get sick, and you're really sick at a time, or one of your loved ones is really sick, and they're in the hospital, and they're at a point where you're not sure what's going to happen, look at how we pray. We pray intensely at that point. And then when they get well and come home and we thank God for that, But, you know, those prayers, they slack off. They're not so intense at that point. And our lives are like that. And God has to impress us with big, major events like this to try to raise our spiritual awareness and help us meditate on what he's doing in our lives. It's like, you know, we read Ecclesiastes. Everybody does. And then we go and want the stuff of this world. And we think somehow that's all going to bring us happiness. I'll go work overtime, and I'll get all this stuff. I'll buy some toys. I want to, you know, skidoos. Look, it snowed. Now we want to go out snowmobile, and I want some big caravan. And we think all these toys are going to bring us happiness. And yet God had Solomon go through all of that to try to help us understand when we read Ecclesiastes, no, that stuff's not going to bring you happiness. It's not going to work. It won't. But look at how often we have to individually revisit Ecclesiastes ourselves, and we play it all out again, even though he took the man who was the most powerful man, the king who had access to whatever he wanted, to take it all, including all the women that he wanted and all the wealth that he wanted from the people. He tried it all. And then he writes us a book and says, look, I tried it all. If you believe me, then don't make the mistake I made. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before those evil days come. But unfortunately, for most of us, we have to personally go through it and experience it all over again. And then we look back and we say, oh, if I'd only believed what he said in Ecclesiastes, I would have never had to go through all that. And that's the kind of thing that he's doing here with Job. So, in chapter 37, out of the south comes the storm, and out of the north the cold, and the breath of God is coming. And he mentions all these natural things that God does in the natural world. And he says in verse 13, whether for correction, or for his world, or for loving kindness. That word in the Hebrew, it means mercy. This idea of saving his people, he causes it to happen. And so Elihu's trying to get Job to look out at the natural world and realize, see God in the snow coming down. See God in the sun coming up every day. He's doing these things so that he can help us, so he can save us. He's doing it for correction sometimes. And in order to work with his world, God causes all these things to happen. So Elihu ends up in verse 14. Listen to this, Job. Stop and consider God's wonders. Look at all these things that God does. And then really think about the fact, if he has the power and the wisdom to do all those things in the natural world, do you really think he doesn't have the power and the wisdom to control your world and all of his other family members and do all the right things to educate and instruct and train them so they can be members of his family? We don't know all these things. Do you know how God controls the clouds and makes this lightning flash? No, we don't know those things. But it's not just to overwhelm Job with, like, look at God's power. No, he's trying to focus Job on this idea, which God will then pick up on. The natural world proves that God has the power and the wisdom to control all these things. We have no idea how you would balance them all out. And he's doing it with all of us here. He's balancing his ecclesial world, his family, and bringing the right events into everyone's life to save us all. That's what we have to learn to trust. Well, and that's really where Elihu is trying to get Job out of his box and realize this. So he says to Job in verse 19 of 37, you know, Job, tell us what we should say to God. You want your day in court? You want to stand up to God and give him your defense and tell him all these things? We can't prepare our case because our minds are dark. We have no idea of the big picture of what God is doing. All we know is our own little world right here. And we're so focused on our own little world, we don't even appreciate how God can use that to save other people. Should he be told that I want to speak? Would any man ask to be destroyed by him? In the sense that, you know, would you really want to go before God? In the end, all he's going to do is destroy you with his arguments that are so great that you never thought of outside your box. You're just going to get destroyed in a debate with God. No one can look at the sun. It's too bright after the wind has swept the skies clean. It's like God is going to come in, not just overwhelm you with brightness. He's going to have wisdom and arguments about what he's doing, Job, you've just never thought of. They're way beyond us. And that's what he's trying to get Job to understand. So that in the end, in verse 20, think everything he does is fair and right. So he doesn't crush people. That's not what he's after. And Elijah's talking about his family. He'll crush the wicked, sure. But let's face it, we're here today because we are part of the family of God. And God is treating us as his children. And we don't want to go around thinking God's going to crush people in this community, although it may be that some of us are, in the end, going to be rejected at the kingdom. We hope not. But the focus is on those he's saving, and that's what Elihu is all about. He doesn't crush people, and that's why they have respect for him. And he does not regard any who are wise of heart, wise in their own minds. So if you think you're going to be wiser than God, you're going down a pathway that is going to be a disaster. But if God's got the power and the wisdom to control all these things that we look at, then how could we possibly think he can't apply that to our lives? See, this is where maybe science is like, we grow up and try to understand in science, and they tell us all about the sun, they tell us about the weather, and you get taught at school all these different things. And man has this idea that we figured it all out. But there's no way. Nobody can control any of these things. We can't even balance them out. We can't even run like when they tried the biosphere and they tried to put people and all the stuff inside a closed container and see if it could exist on its own for a while like a terrarium. It always failed. We can't even do that. We can't harvest energy properly without messing up the planet. We can't do any of these things. God's got it all under control. He's got it all figured out, and he's doing it every day. And do we really think he can't bring the right events into our life to save us? Do we really think it's unfair that something has happened to me and it's out of God's control? No way. He's aware of it all. He's actually using it all for good in order to save his family. So that's where Elihu ends. And now Job has been brought to the point where he's now realized, wow, I didn't see all that. I didn't get it. I was so focused on me, I didn't see what was really happening in the big picture. Now, some people think that when God speaks, I've heard folks actually tell me, he said, do you realize when God speaks, he never answers Elihu's questions? But he doesn't directly answer Elihu's questions. But does he answer Job's? Does he never answer Job's questions? And he does. He answers all of Job's questions, but not like we would. See, what we do when our kids come to us and they ask a question, we answer that specific question. That's what we do. He answers it more like Jesus. Jesus, when they would come and ask him a question, well, I'll ask you a question too. Because he wants to not just answer that specific question you have right now today, because you know as a parent, your children are going to come up and they have the next question, and the next question, and the next question, and it keeps going. What God and Jesus do is they answer the whole big picture at once so that they answer all your questions you're thinking about at the same time. It's not the strategy that we would use usually, but it's the strategy they use. Because he doesn't want to just solve the problem for Job, your specific case right now. He's trying to answer all the questions of his family members, of all the generations that are going to come from this time on, about this kind of a topic. And so here are Job's questions inside his little mind right here, and God's going to answer the whole bigger picture. And when he's all done, Job realizes, wow, I thought I knew about you, but whoo. There's so much more I never understood about how you are working, about how you're training people to be part of his family. So chapter 38 is all about this the natural world. It's like the snow and the rain and the wind and all the rocks and all this kind of stuff. And it's going to deal with the fact that he's got control of all these natural things, and he's got the wisdom. He knows how to make it all function together. Things that we could never do, and then how he uses those things to accomplish his goals for the people that he's trying to save, or to the wicked that he's trying to destroy. And it shows God's power to save his children. This is not just overwhelming Job with, like, look how powerful God is. That's not what his strategy really is. And sometimes people think that when they're reading through these chapters. You're going to see hints all the way along that it's not just about God's power. It's about God's power being used to save his family. This whole world, like Paul says, all things are for your sakes. Or as he sees the entire creation, the whole creation in Romans 8, it's all like a woman in labor, and it's like trying to give birth to a child because God's been trying to bring children out of this creation. And look at what he's done with the natural world to show that that's what he's actually after. So the Lord answers Job then. The whirlwind comes in, and now an angel talks to Job, and he says, "Who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge?" And this would have been, you know, what happened when Job back in chapter 42 there, later on, he's going to talk about that, you know, I was the one, Job admits he was the one who had darkened counsel by words without knowledge. "Now prepare yourself like a man, and I will question you, and you shall answer me." This is what Job had been waiting for, his day to question God. And now Elihu is just like calmed him down, made him look at the whole bigger picture, and now Job's ready to listen, which is what God has to do. He has to get people ready to listen. "So, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God, the angels there, shouted for joy?" So what God is doing is trying to show Job that look at all these things you don't understand. I was able to put all this together. I made it all, and it all functions together for the good of the entire world. You got the wisdom for that? Could you do that? Then how in the world could you possibly deal with people? Look at how complicated people are. Just getting an ecclesia to work together, sometimes just getting a family to work together, is very complex and complicated. God says, "I've got the wisdom to control it all. I can do that just as I can in the natural world." God, look at how God controls the sea. He treats it like I have a newborn baby. And he sees the seas when he created them as like he's giving birth to a child. And who shut up the seas with its doors when it burst forth, it issued from the womb? "When I made the clouds its garments, and the thick darkness its swaddling band, when I fixed my limit for it and set bars and doors, and when I said, 'This far you may come, but no further, and here your proud waves must stop.'" You see what he's doing? He's not just overwhelming Job with information about the power of God. He's underlaying in it this idea that, "Job, I got the power to stop these proud waves. I set limits to how far they're going to go." And he uses that word proud because he's trying to get Job to realize that if I can control these waves, these proud waves, I could also work to control pride in man. And he's laying this basis all along. He's got the wisdom to stop this from advancing. I can cut off pride, which is what Elijah had said in his argument. He said, God uses suffering to prevent you from going down to the pit as in a preventive way. So he says, "Have you commanded the morning since your days began, or caused the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it?" See, this is not just about the natural world. He's using it to answer Job's questions about, come on, God, you don't do anything with the wicked. You just leave them alone. They just grow up and they die and everything's fine and you never touch the wicked. And this is what you do. And God's saying, wait a minute here. The natural creation here, I can show you that I have the power and the wisdom to even make sure that the right things happen. He causes the dawn to know its place. And the sun comes up in the morning because of all the wicked things that the wicked do overnight in darkness. And every day it's my promise. I've laid out in front of you when that sun comes up that I can contain the wicked. I'm preventing them from taking over and destroying my family. I've got this under control, Job. I don't go destroy every wicked, but I've got it contained. I've got it under control. And you know, he's answering Job's questions in a different way than we would answer. "So the earth, it takes on its form like clay under a seal, and it stands out like a garment. From the wicked, their light is withheld, and the upraised arm is broken." So every day, God says, my reminder is out there when that sun comes up, when the sun of righteousness arises, that this is God's power. He's limiting the wicked. They're there on this world. They need to be here for us to grow and develop. But I've got it under control, Job, just like I control the waves. And then the actual natural creation should show that. Or what about the springs of the seas and so on? You know, have you seen the doors of the shadow of death? You know, and he's talking about, you know, going down into the depths of where the seas come from and the earth where, you know, the dead lie. Do you really know how all this works with resurrection from the dead? Have you comprehended the breadth of the earth? God can control the gates of death. And he's storing up his children down there for a day in which, sure, they'll be resurrected from the dead. But Job, I've got it under control. Where's the way to the dwelling of light and darkness? Where is its place? You know, that you may take its territory. You may know the path to its home. Do you know it because you were born then? You know, do you really have all that experience to be able to explain all these things because the number of your days is great? See, God's got the wisdom and the power to control light and darkness. He's balancing it out, Job, and he's doing it in the natural creation, and he's doing it within the ecclesial world and within the world that we live in the same way. And isn't that wonderful to know? I mean, you look at our world over here. Look what he's done for us in the United States and Canada. We live in a community that, although there is wickedness rampant, at least we have Christian people. We have folks around who are nice people to live amongst. Imagine if God just let the wicked prevail to the point that we were all oppressed all the time. We were under the threat of people coming into your homes and taking all your stuff. God has this all under control, and he's doing it for us so that he can raise his children. That's what God is doing. And he proves it to us in the natural world. He's got the wisdom. And he goes on to the treasures of snow, you know, that I reserve for the time of trouble and the day of battle and of war. See, Job, I've got all this stuff under control, and I will use it when the time is right. And so that's what he's trying to get Job to understand here in Job chapter 38, all these natural things. He goes up to the constellations, and he says, look, I can control all of that. I can make sure those constellations appear every night in the sky. I control those stars. That he had no idea what the power of that and how far away those stars actually were. But I can do all those things, Job. Surely I can control your world, and I'm doing it right. I've got the wisdom to do it. It's a carefully organized plan. This is not random. See, Job had said earlier that it was all about randomness, that God treats the wicked and the righteous the same. It's a random thing. Some live, some die, and so on. But he's trying to get him to see, look at how organized this is. It's a plan. The very creation proves I've got the power and the wisdom to have this intricate plan. It's so delicate. It all works together. I've got it all figured out, Job, and it's all under control and always has been. And so is your life. So is everything that's happening in our lives. And the natural creation proves it. And so he goes on, and it's really chapter 38, for the most part, is just one thing after another like this that he's going to look at. So he uses the inanimate creation, all the natural things, to show the unbelievable wisdom and the power of God that he had to make this stuff and sustain it every day. It's power, it's wisdom to balance all these things out. And you look at all the humans trying to do that with all of our ecosystem problems and so on, you can see what a frustration it is that we mess things up all the time. God doesn't do that. And it should have caused Job to rethink his challenges about God's unjust treatment of him. He was so focused on his little piece of the world, he didn't realize the whole big picture that was out there, that God was saving the entire ecclesia through Job. The entire community through Job, not just Job himself. So it illustrated to Job that God sometimes uses natural components of our world to take care of his people and limit the wicked. Sometimes God will do that, and he'll do the same thing in our world today. He keeps the wicked under control so that he can grow his children. So Job starts reflecting on these things and start looking at this idea of what God can do. And now what God will then do is say, okay, now you get it about the inanimate things. What about the living things? So he's taking Job through this process of, now you get it. You see all these inanimate things. But Job might be sitting there and saying, well, yeah, but look at all the living things are more complicated. There's all these living things. And as soon as we try to do that in the real world today, all the living things that interact, you know, our folks in biology that try to set up these systems, living things are unpredictable. They're going to do their own things. And Job's wondering, like, what about the living things? And God's going to say, wait a minute, Job. It's no different than the living things. It's the same kind of thing. I've got the wisdom and the power to control it. So this section actually starts in our Bibles in chapter 38 at verse 39. That's actually where they should have started, chapter 39. Because now he goes on to the animals. And now he's going to use the animals in a different way, still the same ideas, but in a different way to show that animals have different needs. This animal's not the same as this animal, and their needs conflict sometimes. One animal has a need for this, and the other animal has a need for that. And sometimes this fella has to eat this fella in order for this guy to survive. Can you balance that out, Joe? Well, I do. I balance that out. and I take care of the whole creation, not just you. It was never just about you. So can you hunt prey for the lion or satisfy the appetite of the young lions when they crouch in their dens and lurk in their lairs to lie in wait? Can you do that, Joe? I can. I provide them with food. But in order for them to get food, some innocent animal is going to suffer. We have coyotes who come through all the time and eat rabbits in our backyard. We have mountain lions coming through Simi Valley right now, and they like to eat dogs and different things like that. And God's point is that, look at Job, there are times in which this little, what we would call an innocent animal, is going to be devoured by this predator in order for the predator to survive. Because I'm trying to save him and him. I want to save them both. And Job just, he never thought about this ever. That what do you mean? You're going to use innocent to somehow get across something to the people that are not so innocent so they can learn? But you go back to the beginning. What did this story start with? Chapter 1, Satan, right? The challenge that God puts out there, the enemy of the Satan. And see, we don't realize when we read through this book so often, God tried to save Satan. See, I read that for years without even realizing that. God cared about Satan. He was a member of the Ecclesia. God wanted to save him, and he had to show Satan that he was wrong. He was wrong, so get your life in order. And he does that. That's part of what he's going to do. Or who provides food for the raven when its young ones cry to God and they wander about for lack of food? And sometimes what God does is the lions kill off an innocent animal, and the lions are fed, and the ravens come along, and they scavenge off of that. I'm even taking care of them this way. So that this innocent animal that died is providing a means for all these different creatures to survive. And that's the kind of control and balance that God has in his natural world with living things. And he's going to spring that on Job. That I'm doing the same thing with people. With people that I'm trying to bring into my family. This is what it takes. So he goes on in chapters 39 at verse 1. Would you know the time when the wild mountain goats bear their young? Or can you mark when the deer gives birth? Now, you'll notice in chapter 39, he's doing a bit of contrast in between wild and domestic things as you go through these animals, but the focus is on the wild. You say, look at this section here. He talks about the wild mountain goats and then the deer. But then what does the whole rest of the section go on to talk about? Although he's brought them up as a contrast, what he wants Job to realize is, I'm taking care of the wild guy too, not just the deer. And Job's focus has always been on people like him. People that are doing all these right things, blameless. I do all this stuff that's right. And God says, wait a minute, I'm trying to convince these other wild people to join you, to survive, to join my family. So can you mark when the deer gives birth? Can you number the months that they fulfill? Or do you know the time when they bear their young? They bow down, they bring forth their young, and they deliver their offspring. And their young ones are healthy, and they grow strong with grain, and they depart and do not return to them, independent of man, totally. But it's all under God's control. That's what God does. So he goes on to the wild donkey. Who set the wild donkey free? Or who lives the bond of the swift donkey? So there were domestic donkeys and there were wild donkeys. And he's talking about, can you take care of that wild donkey? Look what he does. I gave him the wilderness for a home and the salt land for his dwelling place. He scorns the tumult of the city, the shoutings of the driver he does not hear. He explores the mountains for his pasture and searches after every green thing. He's the wild guy going out there, and he's one of those in the ecclesial life. Now, if you listen to Neville Smart's classes, you ever do, Neville Smart goes through the time to actually take each animal, and he relates it to different people in ecclesial life, our personalities and our lifestyles and things like that, which is sort of fun to look at. But we don't have time to do that this morning, but I think he spends a couple classes on looking at that idea. But what God's trying to get Job to understand is that, look at, don't just focus on the domestic animal, this guy here. Your focus is all on the ones that just are the nice, ecclesial, following the rules members. I'm trying to bring others into this group too. And sometimes it takes something to happen to this core group in order to convince the others to join in the work. And God's got it all balanced. He still cares for this guy, even though he's wild. So he goes on to the wild ox, verse 9. Yeah, probably the ox, you know, which are now extinct, but it would be something like that. It would be this big, giant ox back then. And is he going to be willing to serve you? Is he going to make his bed by your manger, right? And can you bind the wild oxen to furrow with ropes? Can you put a harness on him and use him to plow your field, right? Or can you trust him because his strength is great, and will you leave your labor to him? Will you trust him to bring home your grain and gather it to your threshing floor? Job, you can't do that, but I can, and I can do that in the ecclesial life as well. Look at the silly ostrich. Verse 13, the wings of the ostrich. The ostrich is a wild animal. It just goes out there and it behaves in a wild way. And it's proud. Proud comes up. They wave proudly. So here again, we're seeing this word pride come in. Because God is laying the basis for what he's really after with Job. But her wings and her pinions are like the kindly storks. So you see an ostrich run across there and you think, oh, it looks like a stork, a domestic animal. But it's not like a stork. It's wild. Look what she does. She leaves her eggs on the ground, warms them in the dust. She forgets that a foot may crush them or that a wild beast may break them. She treats her young harshly as though they were not hers. Her labor is in vain, without concern, because God has deprived her of wisdom and did not endow her with understanding. See, there's different people out there, Job. There's different situations, and God is working with them all. He has the power to control them all, and he gave them all what they need to survive. And see, that's a key item. When you look across the community and you look across your ecclesia, God has given all of us. He's given all of us what we need to survive and to grow spiritually and become members of his family. And what he gives you, you and you and you and me, they're all different. It's not equal. And if you think that's not fair, then you don't understand the righteousness of God. That used to be the common thing I would hear in school. I was a public school teacher amongst high schoolers. And I would do something with a child. And, you know, one child in my class, he might misbehave and do something wrong. I would be very gentle with him and talk to him and calm him down and he'd be fine. And another child would stand up and want everybody's attention and do something. And I'd boot him out of the room and talk to him in the hall. And they'd say, well, that's not fair. You didn't treat us the same. I said, well, you don't realize this fellow over here, he's autistic. He's not the same as you. He has different needs. And so this is what God is doing with all of us. We all have different needs. But God, if he has the power and the wisdom to control the natural creation, can't he bring the right things into your life? And they're going to be different than somebody else's. They won't be the same. But he's going to bring the right things into your life to train you if you let him. That's our part. We have to cooperate with it, and we have to play along with it and realize the coach is getting us ready for the big game. And that's what he's doing. So look at God deprived her of wisdom, and so he works with her in a different way. I totally forgot what time this class ends. Does anybody remember? 10:45. Thank you. So strike that from the record. All right. Isn't that wonderful? You can erase stuff on classes now and just wipe them out. So, in chapter 39, going on to the horse, right? Same kind of thing, though. It's still, he's using these things. He paws in the valley. He laughs at fear. He's not dismayed. He doesn't turn back from the sword. God has made an animal that can be used at the right time that normally we would look at and say, well, some of these characteristics about this guy is wild. He's reckless. He goes out and he runs into the battle. But there are times in life where God needs something like this to work in the balance of ecclesial life. So you've got a brother that maybe is a bit reckless like that, and he's a bit wild like that, and you think like, well, you know, you just wish they'd walk out the door and go visit another ecclesia or something. And it's like, wait a minute, this is here because there are going to be times where we need this. You just don't realize it. We don't see that. We have to value all the players God has given us in ecclesial life. It's actually the job of every arranging board, really. When you think about as servants of the ecclesia, you have to evaluate all of the members of the ecclesia, look at what their strengths are, and try to figure out where are the appropriate places for them to work in the ecclesia where you can tap into what they're good at. Because everybody's good at something. Everybody is. You just have to get to know people to find out what they're good at. So that's what the horse does. God gave him this fearless courage for a reason, because he's going to be a useful part. And then the hawks and the eagles, he contrasts them as well. And he says, look at Job. I did all this because I gave these creatures what they need to survive. And when they're out there and the eagle is out there surveying the area And he's out there and he kills an animal and he brings that animal up to his young that are in the nest because he wants to feed them and they are going to suck up blood. And where the slain are, there is he. He's again, if he began and he ends, reminding Job of the fact that sometimes some of these little innocent animals, they suffer. They give their lives for the sake of the others so that the others can grow and develop. And this is a concept Job had just never thought about before. God made all these different animals. He knows what they need to survive, and he has the wisdom and the power to give it to them. But don't think they're all treated the same. Don't go home from here this weekend thinking that God's going to treat you just like he treats me or anybody else in here. He is going to bring into our life what I need, what you need individually. He's the ultimate of what, in teaching, they used to tell us that when you walk into a classroom, you have to get to know all the kids. You have to get to know how they all learn individually. You have to get to know what they need. And then you have to provide a curriculum for each individual student. I mean, this is the theoretical goal of teaching, right? For any of you teachers, you've probably heard this too. And we look at them and say, wait a minute, I got 140 kids coming in today. 140 kids, an hour each. It's like, you really think I'm going to get to know them that well and be able to do that? I can't do this. But God can. He can custom make all the teaching that he does for our lives. That's what angels do. Angels bring, they know us. They bring the right things into our life that we need in order to grow. We just have to trust a loving Father that he has the power and the wisdom to do it. That's all he's asked of us. Just trust him. So he uses those animals to show God's unbelievable wisdom and power that he has to make and sustain the living creation as well. That's what he does. And that God cares for, he cares for all the variety of the animals. See, in our little world, brothers and sisters, we sometimes think that in ecclesial life, there's this perfect Christadelphian world of which we're going to be like this. And usually it's like we're all going to be like me because that's what we tend to focus on. Want everybody to be like me, right? And if you're not like me, we start to look around and judge people and think, well, you're not doing it like me, so you're probably really not part of this group. And unfortunately, that's a very limited group because it's only me. But that's human nature. That's the way we start. That's how we think. And then we get married and we find out, oh, we have a spouse. And that spouse, they're not just like me either. But you know what? You can learn to work with them. Then you have kids and you find out they're really not like me. And then God, see, what God is doing is he's trying to get us out of our own personal box. Get out of that. Quit focusing on me and what I want and learn to take care of somebody else. What a great design. You get married and you learn to take care of somebody else. See, he's got it all figured out. The whole design of family life was all that way because it's helping us to understand what he's looking for in us, what he's trying to develop so that we can be members of his family and join the angels in their work. So Job's being forced in all of this to think about beyond himself and realize that maybe I'm like that little rabbit that gives its life for the sake of a hawk or for a lion so that somebody else can survive. And he never, ever had considered that concept. It was always about me and me being just and me being right. It's got to be fair to me. And you can't just treat us like individuals like that. It's got to be universal. And that isn't how God's justice works. So it's tough to get people out of their box. This is hard. You work with people, you find this out. That culturally, as Christadelphians, we grow up in boxes all the time. We are so limited by what we have been taught, families we grew up in, ecclesias we're members of, situations in our world around us. We are all stuck in boxes, brothers and sisters. And if you don't know that about yourself, you've got to come to understand things. And the box that we're in may not really help us understand the whole plan. Because our box usually has been developed around me, what I want, and what's right for me, and what's fair. And now today I have rights and all this kind of stuff. This isn't helpful in the end. God has to try to get us outside our box and see the bigger picture. So the Lord answers Job in chapter 40 and says, shall the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? He who rebukes God, let him answer him. Come on, Job, come up with an answer. You had all these things to say about me. You had all this evidence you wanted to come in. You're like going to prince and come before me, and you're going to lay out your case, and you're going to show God he's wrong. And Job answers the Lord and says, I'm vile. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand over my mouth. Once I've spoken, but I will not answer. Yes, twice, but I will proceed no further. And Job realized, I've already said enough. Hasn't that happened to you in conversations where you have debates with people and arguments, and then you realize at some point, wow, I really said way too much. And that's a fallacy we all have. It's a flaw because we don't see the bigger picture. That's our problem. The problem God has right now is that although Job has been humbled at this point and he says, I'm not even going to answer you, God, I've said enough already, you might think, why shouldn't it end right there? But see, God knows what Job's thinking up here. And although Job has been humbled to realize there's a bigger picture outside the box, and that God has the wisdom and the control to balance all these things, Job's still hanging on to his righteousness. And God knows that. He's still hanging on to this idea, but I'm right. I've been living the right way. I'm one of those innocent guys. I still have my righteousness, and you haven't treated me fairly. You haven't done it right. And so God brings in two more animals, not to just reiterate more of the same stuff, but these animals are now going to come in and illustrate, Job, you have a problem. You have a problem, Job. And I really think he picks two animals now to illustrate to Job, look at where this has driven you. This whole situation that developed, although it started, you were a righteous man, and people would look at that and say, well, he shouldn't have had to go through this. Why did the righteous suffer? God says, I used this so that the three friends could drive you into this situation where you would realize and understand you need help, Job. You've been now pushed to a point where you think your righteousness is more important than God's, and that you have some kind of righteousness on your own that you can stand up with. And God's going to help him understand that, wait a minute, Job, the only reason you have this is because I developed it in you. And that's the problem with Judaism. It's the problem. It's a universal thing amongst mankind where we want to do the right things. We want to look good before God. But in the end, we think, I did it. Look what I did. That's why Paul would say in Romans 9, you've got to understand, it's not of him who wills, of him who works. It's not about what you do or what you want, but of God who shows mercy. And that's who he's going to use these two animals for. So, you know, in verse 8, you can see, would you indeed annul, the word means to discredit, my judgment? Would you condemn me that you may be justified? He realizes that Job is still stuck in this problem of justifying himself. So what God's going to do now is invite Job to rule the creation. You got the wisdom to do this. You got the wisdom to balance all this out. And he says, can you look on everyone who is proud and humble him? See how he's been using, God had been using this word proud all the way through this whole thing. So had Elihu about balancing pride. Because he realizes, brothers and sisters, that when God gets us to a point where we're doing the right things and we're living the truth, the next problem God has is we become proud of it. And he pictures Job like an animal that is powerful and big, but innocent in the sense that he's not violent. So he's going to use an animal that's very domestic, whatever you tend to think it is, a hippopotamus or an elephant or whatever. And he says, look at this animal walks right through all the wild creatures, and he can just feed on whatever he wants, and nobody bothers him. And that's you, Job. That's what pride does to us. That's what self-confidence does to us. We walk through the ecclesia, and we like the fact that people look at us, and they say, you're quiet when we walk in the room. And they look at us and think, wow, what a good job you're doing. And all these kind of things. And Job, this is you. You've gotten into this now. Now you've been pushed to where you can really see what's happened. Here's the result of that. So, disperse the rage of your wrath and look on everyone who's proud and humble him. Look on everyone who's proud and bring him low. Tread down the wicked in their place. Can you balance that out, Job? Working with the wicked and bringing down the proud? Hide them in the dust together. Then I will also confess to you that your own hand can save you. Because that's what God is going to answer right now. And so the warning for us, brothers and sisters, is be careful. For those of us that grow up and following all the rules, and you're doing all the things that you think are right, and we practice, and we work at it, and we pray about it, we do the readings, we go to the Bible class, and we have this lifestyle now where we think like, look at, I'm doing it all right. The next problem God has with all of us is we become proud of that. We think I'm doing it right, you're doing it wrong, and we think better of ourselves, and we miss the fact that, well, the only reason you're doing it like this is because God trained you to be like that. It was never me. But as a natural person, I would never be the person I am right now. Never. I would have chosen to do all kinds of other things. but the influence of the Word of God, the effect of God and His angels working in our lives, the events that He brings where He shapes and He disciplines and He trains us, He turns us into different people. That's the power of God. But don't ever think that's because of all my hard work and all my Bible study and all my work in the ecclesial life, because I knew all the right things to do in training my children and treating my wife. And all. It was never about me. It's only about what God has taught me to do. It was all of God. And in the end, He has to have us thank Him and praise Him and give Him the glory. That's what God is after. So He goes through the behemoths, whatever you think that was, the hippo or the elephant, or, you know, some people even think maybe it was an extinct animal, like an old dinosaur, but it's a domestic one. And what does He do, this behemoth? You know, that's why, if there really were dinosaurs around back then, it certainly would have been a good one. But look at, I made him too, and look at what this animal does. He's got strength in his hips. He's got all this power. You know, and he goes through and describes him, and only he who made him in the end can bring his sword near, right? But, Job, all right, look at this guy. He walks through all the animals. He goes through the fields. He goes through the rivers. Nothing can stop this guy. He walks right into a flowing river that's overflooding its banks, and he just stands there and opens his mouth and drinks in the Jordan. I mean, this guy, nothing can knock him, right? Well, that was you, Joe. That was you. But I knocked you. I knocked you down and made you think about what you really are. And so that's what he'll do with Behemoth. And then he goes on to Leviathan, who is, on the other hand, a wild creature. He can be the kind of thing that goes out and attacks, and everybody's afraid of this guy. That this is within us, Joe. If I don't control the Behemoth in you, you will turn into this. Here's the effect of sin. It starts with pride, and the next thing you know, it generates all these other types of sins. And he illustrates that through Leviathan. He goes on to a different type of creature, but the same kind of thing. And God's point is that, look, I can control these things. I can work with this if you trust me. And so he says, look, you can't do that. You know, you look at this. Is he going to make a covenant with you? Now, I really think that's a reflection on Job 31, where Job, in his last decree, he said, look, I don't do any of these sins. I've made a covenant with my eyes. I'm not even going to look at a woman. And this is what Job says. And it's like, Job, can you really do that with sin? Can you really just say, I'm going to make a covenant, I'm never going to look at somebody? How do you know? And you're not going to break that covenant. Maybe today you feel that. But how do you have the power and the strength to keep that up? You don't. But I can work with you, Job. I can work to control that if you let me. And that's what he'll do with this animal as you go through these stories. And you know that the rest of Leviathan, you can look at it yourself. But in the end, what Job just realizes is that, oh my goodness, I didn't even see all this. Here I thought I knew it all. I thought I knew how it all worked. And I had all this figured out, and I applied it in my life and everybody else's life. I comforted and counseled. And oh my goodness, I had it wrong all along. I never saw the big picture. And finally, Job is really humbled. I heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now I really see what you're doing and what it takes to save us. And brethren and sisters, for all of us, that's a warning that we don't ever want to become too self-confident. If you're one of those people that's doing really well in ecclesial life, the problem God has is self-confidence and pride. And He promises He'll knock it out of us. But don't be surprised at what it takes to knock it out of us. Usually it's a lot stronger than we think. And in our prayers, when we ask God to help us so that we don't have pride and we overcome these problems, just make sure you realize that when God answers that prayer, it might be a lot more drastic than you ever thought. And you have to be ready for it. You have to understand He's not destroying us. He's trying to knock out a power, a devil that's in us. Like He's trying to destroy it and overcome it like He did in His Son. And so thank God and trust Him in our lives for all these things He brings into our lives, realizing that He's not just saving me, but He's saving all the people that I come in contact with. And thank God for His wonderful wisdom and His mercy in dealing with us all. So we'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.